If you think of the Middle East in this modern time, you can't help but say the word Palestine. People there have lost their land. Some have lost their home. They live in other countries, their freedom almost gone. Palestine needs her freedom.
Welcome to another edition of Raising Sand Radio. I'm Susan Gallimore with Lucy Murphy in Palestine to introduce today's show. March 22nd was International Water Day, and today we highlight the growing water crisis in Palestine that affects agriculture, industry, and the health of virtually every adult and child. The Gaza Strip is plagued by extremely poor water quality. The sole source of fresh water for the Gaza Strip is the coastal aquifer, a water source shared with Israel. This aquifer has been contaminated for years, and it is deteriorating even further. Poor sanitation and over-extraction have polluted this limited water supply. Today we take a look at the water crisis in the region with Ziad Abbas, a Palestinian refugee from the Daisha refugee camp in the West Bank and current associate director of Middle East Children's Alliance. We'll also hear other perspectives on the issue.
Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love.
In September 2009, the Middle East Children's Alliance, or MECCA, launched the Maya Project to provide Palestinian children with clean, safe drinking water. Maya is the Arabic word for water. The project began when the student parliament at the UN Boys' School in Beirut refugee camp, Gaza, were given the opportunity to choose one thing they most wanted for their school. They chose to have clean drinking water. With me today is Ziad Abbas, a Palestinian refugee from Daisha refugee camp in the West Bank. He's co-founder of the Ibda Cultural Center in Daisha, where he served as co-director from 1994 to 2008. Ziad Abbas is also a journalist and associate director of the Middle East Children's Alliance, or MECCA, based in Berkeley, California. Welcome, Ziad Abbas, and what is the Maya Project?
Maya, the water issue in Palestine, it's one of the main crises where the Palestinian people, they face it in their daily life. I speak about the Palestinian people living in West Bank and Gaza Strip, even the Palestinian people, they are living inside Israel in 1948. And Maya, it was targeted by the Israeli occupation since the beginning since the beginning of the occupation in 1948. And they tried to control the water and the water resources too. In Palestine, we have around 8 aquifers in all historic Palestine. 4 aquifers is inside what Israel right now, inside the Israeli area, and we have the other aquifers in West Bank and Gaza Strip. One of the main aquifers actually is in Gaza Strip. So Israel, they have different kind of rules and laws to control the water, including a military actually orders to make it difficult for the people to approach the water resources in West Bank and in Gaza Strip.
So when you say the military, that means that there is actually forces out protecting water sources?
Yeah, absolutely. It's because West Bank and Gaza Strip under military occupation since 1967. So additional to the laws that the Israeli they use to legitimize their policy in West Bank and Gaza and to organize the Palestinian life, they add to that the military orders. And some of the military orders actually related to the water, and especially to for the Palestinian farmers, if they want to have, if they want to dig a well so they can get the water from the underground to take care of their farms, which Palestinians, they are not allowed to do that since 1967.
Not allowed to dig more wells.
Yeah, they are not allowed to dig more wells, and those exist, it's under Israeli control, and they have special authority. Even certain areas which Israel, they relate to the big water authority inside Israel called Mikrot. And Mikrot, they are responsible about, they are who controlling the water resources. They pull the water and they sell it back to the Palestinian. And they take it from West Bank and they sell it back to the Palestinian. And it's very expensive. So Maya, actually, for me personally, I grew up in a community in my family that facing this daily problem.
Which this we is don't now have. In Daisha refugee
yeah,
camp.
Yeah, in Daisha refugee camp in West Bank. I grew up in my family watching my mom every day carry the water in big cans on her head, walking miles on the hills, mountains, to get the water from the spring to our home. I used to shower one time a week because we don't have water every day, running water to our house. United Nations also, like, because refugee camps under the United Nations responsibility, they were like organizing the water in the camp three times a week. And they opened the water only for certain hours. And it's the water, it's like they have five locations in the camp where the families and the people in the camp, especially women, they go, they collect the water from the five locations and bring it back to their homes. But in between, we can't get the water in our house. And in Gaza Strip, it's different. Gaza Strip with the aquifer there, but recently there are some reports, including CNN report, including Amnesty report, that show that 95% of the water in Gaza Strip is polluted and undrinkable water. And this has raised the danger threat right now toward the people in Gaza, and especially the new generation in Gaza. And there are many other other studies like try to cover this issue, especially the health studies find out that many diseases in Gaza right now related to the pollution of the water.
How did the water get polluted?
There are different reasons for that, for the water. First of all, we have the sea level, where in the Mediterranean Sea in Gaza Strip, the sea level up of the aquifers, down underground, and the sand, because the sand is not strong, it's not a rocky area like in Gaza Strip. The people, it's easy to dig, go down, approach the ground in a few meters in just a few hours because it's sand. It's like on the beach. So the water succeed to approach the aquifer. Second, the Israeli settlers in 2005, when they the Israeli settlers would left Gaza Strip, before they did that, they destroyed all the wells. Which all the settlers, all the settlements, they have, some settlements, they have more than five wells. So they destroyed it, and even other case, there were some settlements, some settlers, connected the sewage system to the wells before they leave. Instead to take the water out of the aquifer, they send the water to the aquifer, but this time with the sewage system. They open the sewage system to the aquifer. Such kind of revenge, like against the people living in Gaza. The other pollution, the other reasons for the pollution in the water is the purification system in Gaza Strip, which the treating the sewage system since the siege, actually 2006, and Gaza attacked many times between 2006 and last attack in big attack in end of 2009 end of 2008 and the beginning of 2009. This purification system stopped treating the sewage system, so the water natural way go down the sewage system, the water go down and approach the aquifer. Even there is a report recently came through United Nations, and they said in between 10 years to 15 years Gaza Strip will be out of any kind of drinkable water.
Altogether.
No water in Gaza Strip. And this is, I believe, it doesn't need 10 to 15 years. If the situation continue like this, where Gaza, the purification system, the sewage system treatment infrastructure will not be fixed and will not be be able to treat the sewage system, this will be like in the next few years. And Israel, until now, they prevent to allow the United Nations or to allow the community in Gaza Strip to import the building materials so they can fix the beautification systems in Gaza.
So let me remind our listeners that we're talking with Ziad Abbas, of the Associate Director of the Middle East Children's Alliance, and Mecca is now has a project called the Maya Project in response to this water issue. Talk about the water project.
Water project for Mecca, it's a natural response to the people's needs. As you mentioned in your introduction, it came as a call from the children Gaza Strip. Mm-hmm. When we ask the children what they want from us as Mecca, because we are an organization working for children in the Middle East, and usually we approach the children, what you need from us. And we were expecting that the children, they will come back to us to ask, we want computers, we want toys, we want TVs, we want some stuff like this. But they came in a strange way, and in very simple, but it was really reflect the needs in Gaza Strip. They came to us asking for the possibility to have a clean glass of water when they go to school, because they can't drink water in their schools. And absolutely, for us at Mecca, when we thought about the issue, we are aware of the water crisis in Palestine in general. But the children themselves, they wake up, they ring the bell for us. Mm. And when we start looking around, we find that there is a company in Gaza Strip, local company, local engineers, they succeed to produce the purification systems, but in a small, it's not like a huge, you can use it for neighborhoods or towns or cities. And 80% of the material, it's local material. They don't need to import. Only they need to import like 20% of the material to build the purification system. And we find out that the company, they can produce like two sizes of the purification system. One small size for like between 250 to 300 children, which we use for kindergartens. And one, it can cover like 1,500 to 2,000 students in schools, which consider it as the big size of the purification system. And we approached an agreement with the company that we will collect funds and try to build the purification systems. And so far, we have right now 7 purification systems built in different schools and kindergartens, and 6 on their way, coming like. So the end of next 2 months, we'll have 13 purification systems. And just we got back, me and my the executive director of Mecca, Barbara Lubin, just we got back from New Mexico, and we had a speaking tour, and many organizations, they are ready to respond to the children needs in Gaza Strip, and we are expecting more purification system coming. And we are now, we have this campaign in all United States, even in Europe. We try to approach the communities, the human rights, the churches, the mosques, the synagogues, the students' groups, everyone to be in solidarity with the children in Gaza Strip to build the purification system, which is a simple need for children, just they want to survive.
And so there's a very good response to it so far. Have you been getting any negative responses?
So far, no, but the idea, I can't say it's a good response until we finish all the schools in Gaza Strip to feel secure, which they are around 260 schools. And we got this stand, and we'll continue with it, because this is the only way we can at least contribute and help and support the children in Gaza Strip to survive. No one can handle this problem. We can't solve it. But at least we will help the children to get a clean glass of water when they will go to schools and kindergartens in Gaza Strip.
Ziad, I want to open this up to mention that a few months ago we did an interview with an Israeli environmental group called Zalul. Well, they told me two things that were very interesting. One was that I asked if they worked with the Palestinians, and they said at this point just to talk about environmental issues is pretty radical, and that's my word, in Israel generally, and so that they don't, because it to bring Palestinians to start talking about Palestinians adds a layer of complexity that they're not ready to deal with yet. And then the other thing they told me was that there's an enormous amount of very polluted water from Israeli industry. Can you comment on either of those?
Absolutely. I can't say it's not just the Israelis, they are not ready to cooperate around the environmental issues and the water issues, etc. I think if you look about it, it's occupation. And this is our actually sad part, which we don't have a real partner inside the Israeli community. Even for the basic, like far from politics, it's impossible to be far from politics in that part of the world. But for example, like the education system, like the environmental issues, the water issue, a lot of stuff, it's impossible to cooperate because the other side, I mean the Israeli side, they are part of this occupation. They are part of the machine destroying the Palestinian community, the Palestinian infrastructure, the possibility for the Palestinian to live. And I say this because it's very sad when you see the Israelis like they care about the nature inside Israel, for example. They care about the water, which the Israeli people, they get water tens of times more than the Palestinian they take in West Bank.
Is it the same price for Israelis?
No, absolutely. No. It's not the same price. And it's even if it will be the same price, it's not the same income, because the income in Israel is very high. At the same time, Palestine is very low. The employment in Palestine, it's very high. In Israel, low comparing to the Palestinian community. And I believe it's not just they don't want to cooperate to support the Palestinian. The environmental organizations and environmental factories, all this stuff in Israel, they throw their chemical garbage in West Bank. They are destroying the environment in Palestine. And me personally, as a Palestinian refugee from Dehesha refugee camp, we suffered a lot. I was born in Dehesha refugee camp. Since I grew up, I saw this big factory near my camp cutting huge stones, cutting mountains, and all the dust coming toward the Dehesha refugee camp. And this factory continued working despite the fact that the people in the community, they tried to stop this factory, and they went to the Israeli Supreme Court. It took like 18 years until they took the decision, until they finished the work. They don't need to do the work anymore. Mm. They are done. They cut the mountain. But we find out right now in our camp that we are the highest in our area, and I believe in West Bank, the cancer issue, breast cancer, children, they born with cancer. And we have young generation, they passed away in the camp because of the cancer. And additional to that, the kidney problem, because the water polluted from the dust, etc. The food, you will find the sand everywhere. Just if you open the window for 1 hour, the sand will approach each corner inside the house. And this is like related, if you go to the north of West Bank, especially Tul Karim area, Qalqilya, Jenin, where it was easy for the Israeli, because they are very close to the Israeli cities in that area, where it's part of the chemical garbage thrown in West Bank.
Because the environmental laws are different for both areas. It's easier to set up an environmentally polluting company in the West Bank.
Absolutely, it's not just different. In Israel, you'll find the Israeli laws try to protect the Israelis and to keep the environmentally clean for the Israeli people. But we are Arab in West Bank, we are not included as part of the human being, or we are not treated like the Israelis. So any laws that it will go there, look for the courts, for example, for the same crime, if I want to call it a crime, you will find the Palestinian will stay in jail for years, maybe 20, for 30 years. But the Israelis, they will stay only some time to pay a fine. Mm-hmm. If Palestinian, for example, kill an Israeli, life sentence in Israel. If Israeli kill a Palestinian, it will be a fine. And even one case, it was only one shekel. It's like actually one third of 25 cents.
One shekel fine?
One shekel fine. Or 6 months service, community service. And this is, I make it easy how the Palestinian, they are not considered as a human being, I can say it, and no human rights can protect the Palestinian.
having said that, there are also these water tank groups that take water in these tanks into the West Bank to highlight this issue of water. Have you heard about those?
Actually, I did not hear, but I know that water tanks, like, it's a good business in West Bank.
And I'm talking about Israeli groups bringing water tanks in to highlight the issue of Palestinian water.
Maybe the groups which they are doing, they are in solidarity with the Palestinians, where they can bring water to the certain areas in West Bank. Yeah, but I can say, yeah, maybe some people, they are like doing that. Mm-hmm. But if you want to think about it, like in summer, it's really, really a big crisis for people in West Bank. And here I speak about West Bank, it's a huge crisis in West Bank, because the crisis continuous in Gaza Strip. Doesn't mean there is no crisis. Mm-hmm. Crisis is there in Gaza Strip, 95% undrinkable water. So their struggle is every day. In West Bank, in winter, the needs for clean water, it will be less, because many, the people in West Bank, before they build any house, recently, last 20 years, before they build the house, they try to build a small well under the house. Here in the state, they build this basement. In Palestine, they build a small well where they can store the water. And if you go to the roof of the houses in Gaza Strip, in Gaza Strip and West Bank, you'll find all the houses, they have water tanks to keep the water for more days.
Rainwater.
Like in my family, we have 11 water tanks on the roof of our house. Mm. And you'll find some houses, even if they have 15, it depends how many people in the family. Just when they stop the running water, so you can have the water for another few days after, maybe, or in between when it will stop. We never get running water. I never experienced this in my life. I am 45 years old. I lived in West Bank, in my refugee camp. I never experienced the running water for like 1 week. We never experienced this. And this is something I still enjoy it here in the United States of America. Two things. I enjoy it every day. I enjoy the possibility to have a shower every day. And without thinking that, you will go to the bathroom, to the shower, and open no water. And this is something I feel it every day. I feel I am really privileged. And sometimes I joke with my friends when I call them in West Bank or in Gaza Strip. And the second thing, actually, the movement when I drive. That I can drive. I love driving.
No checkpoints.
No military checkpoints. No one will stop you. And you can move, which we stuck like in 10 square miles. You're driving like in 10, 15 minutes, you finish the whole area. This is something simple where I compare that. It affected me, and I feel I'm privileged to be here in the United States of America comparing to the life in Palestine.
Which brings us back to the children, because as you mentioned now, the children are growing up this way and not having water in their houses and not having the sense that they can move as they need to in this country. What kind of impact does that have on a child?
You know, when we speak about the water, actually, in general, and Palestinian children, absolutely we don't have that much connection to the water. Even Palestine location, the Palestinian location, the location of Palestine. Like, we have the Mediterranean Sea, we have the Red Sea, we have the Dead Sea, we have Tiberia, the lake in Tiberia, we have the Jordanian River, and our children, they grow up, they never access to visit
any of those.
Many of those. Mm. Since 1993, Palestinians, they are not allowed to enter inside Israel. Which people like, this is sometime when we speak with our friends in Gaza, we used to speak, hey, you have the sea in Gaza Strip, at least you have the sea. But now the people in Gaza, they have the sea, but the fishermen, they cannot go more than a few miles to the inside the water, because the Israeli Navy and the Israeli military boats waiting for them. And we hear all the time the news that they bombed this boat, they killed fishermen, etc. So the Palestinian children, they are missing that. Even when I was in the camp working with the culture center there and tried to teach the children, just the only possibility for them, for us to do, is to show them videos about the Mediterranean Sea or the Dead Sea or the Red Sea. And I remember when I used to travel, in 2005, actually, I was with a group of children and women from my refugee camp. And the moment we approached Sweden, And the second day they drove us with the bus to the beach of the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. You can't see the impact on them. This is the ocean, this is the water, and like everyone, I was watching them. And this is sad. Children, and the children and the women, they have the same. The women, they are in mid of 30s, and the children, they are like between 12 and 16. All this effect, like, in everyone.
Mm.
And when you think about the children's life growing up, struggling to have clean water or to have a shower or to play in water, it's not possible.
Mm-hmm. And as you say, to think of water first over all of the other potential things that kids could ask for, computers, toys, or give us a glass of water.
For me personally, I was a child, but when I grew up and I start working with children, I learned a lot from children. And sometimes children, they can't teach you about certain things like basic needs, basic, you try to like please the children in certain kind of computer, toys, Atari, all this games. But no, children sometimes they come with certain things they are missing and just they ask for it. And this is the surprise actually for us. Mm. When the children, they came, clean glass of water. They did not ask about computer lab, which in many other areas, for example, we are working with children. Oh, we need a computer lab. We need a video camera. We need digital camera or some stuff where they can, they like it. They are like inspired by the watching that in the TV, etc. But they came with a glass of water. And it showed that how much the international community, even the Palestinian community, how much they are far from the children's needs.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that our children, I can say all Palestinian children, they are without childhood. If they are missing a basic need for them to have clean water in their schools, and of course in their homes too,
mm-hmm.
but their homes, they can boil the water. And this is the tradition now in Gaza Strip. They boil the water to clean it. And right now, It show how much our children, they are missing their needs to survive.
So how can people get involved?
Absolutely, people, they can get involved. And this is an issue like, I believe everyone should join, should contribute to this. Because we speak about Palestinian political rights, their political rights to have their country, return back to their homes, But we want a generation to survive. Palestinian, they are facing ongoing genocide. I call it slow genocide. We have hundreds of kids, they were died because they got disease from the water, because the water is polluted. And even some of the children, they couldn't get the treatment out of Gaza because the Israeli siege, and no one allowed to go to leave Gaza Strip without a permit from the Israelis. People, they can evolve, especially in this country, in the state. We know how much the American government pay taxes to pay money to Israel from the American people taxes. You speak about $3 billion in minimum for
a year,
yeah. Every year to Israel. Right now, we want our children to survive in Palestine. They need clean water. They deserve to have a clean water. So people, they need to take a stand. And the easiest way to do that, people visit our website, www.meccaforpeace.org. And they can contact us, they can contribute to this project, to schools, universities, churches, community centers, mosques, synagogues, any group, anything, I believe they can contribute for this issue.
And actually, with Tax Day coming up, April 15th, this is a very good time to be contributing, because if you'd rather pay taxes, $3 billion of it is going to go to the Israelis every year, or you can get a tax deduction for this donation, right?
Absolutely, and this is the people where they need to be aware of that. Don't contribute to the incubation, contribute to organization, and it will be tax deductible, so you'll not face any kind of harm. You will not break the laws or do something. But this is the basic, the very, very, very simple thing, you can do it.
And that's 7 already built water purification plants, 6 coming online, and maybe even more if people will get on board. And
Yeah, absolutely. We want the people. Six on their way, seven already there, and even we have a lot of picture for children. They are drinking clean water. We are approaching around 260 projects. So we have long way. The contribution now, it will help us to continue bringing clean water to the to children in Gaza Strip. And don't forget, Gaza Strip is 1.5 million Palestinian living in the largest prison on earth. And water, it's one of the symbol need, basic need for the children to survive.
Thanks for being with us today, Ziad Abbas.
Thank you so much for raising this issue. And this is something where we can contribute, even to raise awareness about the situation in Gaza. Mm-hmm. And just I want to add, we've reduced here like water bottles, which is a sign of Maya project, and explain to the people about the water situation in Gaza Strip. Even you can order and buy a water bottle from Mecca. At the same time, the money you will pay, it will go direct to the projects in Gaza Strip.
So again, go to the website meccaforpeace.org, and there's also other things that you can order, but the water bottle is a refillable water bottle that is a symbol of this Maya project.
Yeah, absolutely. This is like a symbol for Maya project. At the same time, you can carry it, and the people, they can see it and learn. It's like
it's
such kind of advertisement and raise awareness about the water situation in Gaza Strip. I think there are many issues, it's connected to each other. I know about the water crisis in LA, and now we have a billboard actually in LA, where we try to educate that the people, they have the right to get clean water, the same in Gaza Strip. We try to connect the water crisis in LA with the water issue in Palestine. And I believe people here, it's something, something actually important to do. And think all the time when you want to drink water, think about that. There are many people in this world, not just in Palestine, they don't have this opportunity to have a clean water. Mm-hmm. And we need to support each other and take a stand with each other. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us.
And thank you for this initiative again.
That was Ziad Abbas, Associate Director of Middle East Children's Alliance, Mecca, and you can go to their website to learn more or to make a contribution to the Maya Project. The website is meccaforpeace.org, meccaforpeace.org.
Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. There seems to be no answer to give us the reason why people cannot live, so no one has to die. We've got to take a stand for freedom. Take a stand for truth. Take a stand for justice. That's what we've got to do. 'Cause Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love.
This is Susan Gallimore with Raising Sand Radio, and you can learn more about the progressive issues we air by visiting our website raisingsandradio.org and linking to organizations and reports mentioned in this weekly show that broadcasts a wide range of progressive views and ideas. And we do it all in collaboration with you. If you go to our website, raisingsandradio.org, you'll find that all of our shows are downloadable, and you can. There's a whole list of shows there. We've been airing shows for about 3 years. I think we're just going into our fourth year. So all of those shows are available, and you can download them directly from the internet, or if you want a CD version, you can purchase one for, I think it's $5 on the internet. You can also consider contributing to our work. You can either get in touch with me and talk about shows you'd like to air yourself. But another way you can contribute is by donating to us. And to do that, I'm going to make it easy for you this time. My book, Long Time Passing, Mothers Speak About War and Terror, shares the stories of families in Palestine and looks at the day-to-day reality that they face. It also shares stories from Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, Lebanon, and the United States. An author-autographed hard copy edition of this book is available to you as a premium with a donation of $50 to Raising Sand Radio and our parent organization, Mother Speak. Go to the website raisingsandradio.org to order and help us air progressive ideas and themes like this week's show. Our listeners come from all over the world. As you know, if you are one of those listeners tuning in from a faraway place like Norway or Armenia or South Africa or Russia or West Bank or Australia or Canada, we have listeners from all of those places. Moreover, Raising Sand Radio is a labor of love and concern for people over profit, but today's dire circumstances are also a matter of survival. If you can't donate financially, donate time or just let us know that our work is appreciated. Again, the website is raisingsandradio.org, and there's a PayPal button, as I said. We're fiscally sponsored by Peace Development Fund. If you want to get in touch with me directly, it's susan@raisingsandradio.org. Now we're going to turn to a couple of clips from Al Jazeera. The first one aired on International Water Day.
The 22nd of March is World Water Day.
In Gaza, Palestinians are taking advantage of that day to shed light on one of their biggest problems. The latest official statistics reveal that in the Gaza Strip, more than 80% of the residents don't get clean drinking water at home.
In fact, officials from the water sector have described the situation as catastrophic.
Tamer El Mashal from Gaza has the details.
For the past 3 years, Riyad has been in this line of work. He sells water to the residents of the Gaza Strip. He says that it's hard work. His customers call him non-stop.
For example, a customer starts in the morning and calls all day long, questioning me as to why I didn't come. He's unable to lead his daily life with salt water.
Home water tanks that are linked to the water network cover over 90% of residential rooftops in Gaza. However, the water that they receive from the municipality does not conform to internationally recognized health standards. Inside this comfortable home, it seems that the kitchen is equipped with everything. But the main and vital problem remains the water supply.
This is our most basic right, to drink a cup of water. Sometimes we have no access to it. Gaza is the only area in all of Palestine that gets salt water.
The reason for Gaza's salty and polluted water is that it relies on underground water tanks for its drinking water. But because of the scarcity of rain and an increased consumption, these tanks have a limited supply. Seawater links into these tanks, in addition to the power outages and the leakage of dirty water into some underground tanks. Big problems. But according to architect Manzul Shoblak, who is responsible for the water sector in Gaza, a solution is feasible.
What prevents us from accomplishing our dreams and our project to find a substitute for the underground tanks is, first of all, the Israeli siege on the Gaza Strip and our inability to seriously invest in alternatives. Another reason is the prevention of donor organizations to assume their natural roles and return to work in the Gaza Strip because of the siege and, unfortunately, because of their dissatisfaction with Gaza's current government.
More than 80% of Palestinians in Gaza don't get clean drinking water at home. They have no choice but to work hard to seek out one of their most basic rights. Tamer Mishal, Al Jazeera, Gaza, Palestine.
Now, the following segment is an edited version of an Al Jazeera Inside story aired last year after Amnesty International's report was published on the water situation in the West Bank and Gaza. I air it here today to highlight the repetitive nature of the inability to resolve this critical issue. Go to the website raisingsandradio.org for a link to the entire show, which appeared on Al Jazeera's Inside Story. So what I mean by the repetitive nature of the inability to solve this issue is we'll hear two people, one from Amnesty International and another representing the Israeli voice. It's very difficult to continue this conversation year in, year out when so many people are struggling, and yet it seems as though this is going to be what happens. And here again is an interview from Inside Story that just really highlights this intractableness, this intractable way of doing business.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Imran Garda. Amnesty International has accused Israel of discriminating against Palestinians over water distribution. In its latest report, the organization says Palestinians are being denied access to good quality water. Israel and the occupied territories get their water from stores called aquifers. Well, the mountain aquifer is the only underground water source for the occupied West Bank. The report says Palestinians only have access to 20% of it, while Israelis get 80%, despite having access to other aquifers. The report says Palestinians use around 70 liters of water a day per person, whereas each Israeli uses more than four times that amount. Gaza's only source of water is the coastal aquifer, and the report says that up to 95% of this water is unfit for consumption. Well, a spokesman for the Israeli Foreign Ministry has rejected the allegations cited in the Amnesty report. A statement issued to Al Jazeera said, Israel has fulfilled all its obligations regarding the supply of additional quantities of water to the Palestinians and has even extensively surpassed the obligatory quantity. The Palestinians have significantly violated their commitments under the water agreement. Israel has offered to supply Palestinians with desalinated water, but this possibility is systematically rejected due to political motivations. Well, joining us now are our guests in Jerusalem, Donatella Rovera, the Amnesty International's chief researcher for the Middle East, and also in Jerusalem, Gerald Steinberg, the executive director of NGO Monitor, a non-governmental organization based in Jerusalem. Thank you very much, all of you, for joining us. Ms. Rovera, if I could start off with you, give us some insight into how you gathered the information you have to write up this report.
The information was gathered by field work conducted here over a period of several months by reviewing in details all the documents of the Joint Water Committee meetings between the Israeli and the Palestinians. Of course, the documents which are at the base of that, the Oslo Agreement, by collecting dozens and scores of demolition orders issued by the Israeli army against water facilities, notably water cisterns which Palestinian villagers build in order to collect rainwater. By carrying out field work in the West Bank and Gaza. We also contacted the Israeli Water Authority seeking a response to a number of questions several weeks ago, but we have yet to receive a response. The key figures come from the most authoritative Israeli official sources, notably the Hydrological Service of Israel, the Ministry of the Environment, and the Israeli Water Authority.
You state a very powerful case now. You heard what the Israeli Foreign Ministry told us in that statement. They've also said they've called your report, quote, questionable, and they question your real intentions with this report and the intentions of your organization itself. How do you respond to that?
Don't they always? It's you know, very much the practice that we seek information, we do not get any response to our letters, to our requests for information. And when we publish our reports, then the Israeli authority responds saying that we didn't consult and so on. So the response is not surprising. It's the usual response to reports by Amnesty or other international or indeed Israeli organizations. The Israeli authorities have not, to date that I've seen, provided any evidence that the report is not sound factually. I've seen some of the figures that the spokesperson Mark Regev put out earlier today, and he was a little bit economic with the truth there, because, for example, in the quantity of water allocated to the Palestinians, he was including some 50 million cubic meter water per year, which Israel sells to the Palestinians. Having extracted the water from the joint aquifer, the shared aquifer, this water is then sold to the Palestinian. Secondly, some of the language that is being used in terms of Israel supplying the Palestinians, we're talking about a shared water resource, the mountain aquifer. So it shouldn't be about one side supplying the other. It should be about both sides having fair and equitable access. Now, Israel controls the water resources. I've also noticed, and this is important for it to be on the record from the start, that the Israeli authorities have not even mentioned the Jordan River, of which, of course, the Palestinians get 0%.
Okay, let's bring in Gerald Steinberg. Mr. Steinberg, Donatella Rovera said that she's not seen any evidence that the report is not sound factually. Are you going to provide us with any?
This just sounds like Richard Goldstone saying that all the critics didn't bother to read the report and there's no substance. In fact, the real problem here is Amnesty International. Donatella Rivera has produced report after report, which starts with the indictment of Israel. Amnesty International has no expertise in water, and that's clear from the report. Amnesty International is a human rights organization dealing with prisoners of conscience. They don't know anything about the rules of war. They don't know anything about dealing with conflict. This is about propaganda to paint Israel, as all amnesty reports from this region do, as a violator of everything so that it feeds the process of conflict. It's anti-peace. There's no substance in this.
Okay.
If
so
there was substance in this, they would have distinguished between urban use and industrial
use. Let's take amnesty out of the picture for a second. I'm willing to take amnesty out of the picture for a second. You say that amnesty is the problem.
We wouldn't be doing
this. Let's bring in Beit Selem then. Beit Selem, the Israeli human rights organization, they say up to 200,000 Palestinians in the West Bank have no access to running water. Beit Selem also says 90 communities in Hebron are not connected to a running water network. They also go with the figure that 80% of the mountain aquifer goes to Israel, 20% to the Palestinians. So we've taken amnesty out of the equation, and still the figures show us that it's terribly unfair, this distribution of water, isn't it?
We wouldn't be having this discussion, Al Jazeera wouldn't be doing a program, if groups like, political groups like Amnesty and B'Tselem wouldn't be pushing this as the issue of the month. In fact, what we're seeing is that the next wave of boycott, divestment, and sanctions speeches in the United States by Omar Barghouti, guess what? They're going to be focusing on allegations that Israel is using water as a means of ethnic cleansing and apartheid. So Amnesty and B'Tselem and the boycott movement, and it's quite clear, are all working together. If we want to look at water, let's look at the U.S. government's National Academy of Sciences survey of water usage. And what we'll see here is that the Israeli use per capita is among the lowest in the world among industrialized countries. Most of the water that Israel uses goes for industry. And the Palestinians, because particularly in Gaza, are so busy importing rockets, which Amnesty doesn't care about, 8,000, 9,000 rockets underneath tunnels. That's the main industry in Gaza, the war industry. So they don't have jobs and they don't produce items which require the use of water.
Okay.
We're not talking about urban use of water. That's what's wrong with all of these reports.
Right,
they are political.
Donatella Rovera. Donatella, let's go back to some of the accusations made against you by Mr. Steinberg. Essentially, he was saying Amnesty is part of a political smear campaign, like even the Goldstone report, he said. You have a hidden agenda, Donatella.
Mr. Steinberg begins to sound a little bit like a broken record, because this is the similar accusation that he makes against every report by every organization, international or Israeli. I would like to talk about facts and figures and evidence to do with water, which is what we're here to talk about. I would like to discuss the fact that in the West Bank, settlements which are unlawful under international law and are visible for anybody who wants to, you know, take a drive to the north or south or east or west can see, where there are great vast green, well-irrigated farms inside Israeli settlement alongside swimming pool. And next door, there are absolutely parched Palestinian villages where the communities are existing on less than 20 liters a day per person, where even the small cisterns that the Palestinian villagers build to collect a little bit of rainwater that can help them relieve the shortages in the summer does get demolished by the Israeli army. And I have copies of those demolition orders. Now, those are the real issues, because those are facts.
Gerald, again, facts and figures are strongly against what you're saying, that this is just a smear campaign.
Let's start with the fact. Donatella Rivera knows less about water in this region than I do. She's a politician. She's been writing these reports. One week it's on white phosphorus, false claims, and one week it's on international law, which she clearly doesn't understand as clear from this report, because they're things which are invented. So she's learned a little bit about of water in order to make another smear attack against Israel. So I hope that Ms. Rivera will now admit that she should not be on this program and she should not be writing these reports either.
Gerald Steinberg, what are you offering to us in terms of facts that can counter what Donatella Rivera is putting on the table?
Let's start with one fact that's completely missing from this political report that Amnesty's produced, that there are many, many dozens of instances in which Palestinians, perhaps connected with Fatah, perhaps connected with Hamas, have drilled in order to take water in order that which they're not entitled to, which does tremendous damage to the underground aquifer. There are dozens and dozens of these examples. On the Israeli side, many farmers are going to have to close their farms because of the huge drought that's been going on in the region. We share one issue, and that is that we all have a short water shortage. And when Palestinians don't take care of their sewage, and it runs into the aquifer and destroys tremendous amounts of water, and Amnesty, because it doesn't fit the political narrative, Donatella Rivera doesn't want to talk about that fact. So not only are the facts that they have in their report wrong, but they leave out the facts that they don't like because they have a political agenda.
Well, you put a
lot
of people in
immoral and wrong.
You put a lot of people in the same basket, the UN, Human Rights Commission, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International. It sounds like a massive conspiracy of millions of people against you, Gerald. But you did bring up an interesting point. You said we're all in this together. Let's try and broaden this out a bit. Look at it that way. By some estimates, 40% of the groundwater upon which Israel is now dependent, and more than a third of its sustainable annual water yield, originates in the occupied territories. Israel uses far more water per capita than any other country in the region. Yet even after appropriating the majority of the West Bank's water, it is struggling to meet its demands. Well, the problem is compounded by the effects of industry and climate change, which have contributed to the shrinking of the Sea of Galilee. Israel has explored the possibility of pumping water from several sources, including the Nile. However, Turkey possesses the largest amount of fresh water in the region. And in 2002, the two countries signed a 20-year deal to ship in about 3% of Israel's annual water needs. The deal was scrapped because of high costs and technical complexities. But other options remain, including the construction of a water pipeline from southern Turkey. However, this pipeline would pass through Syria and Lebanon, countries that Israel is still officially in a state of war with. Donatella, it's interesting when we broaden it out in an entire region where fresh water is at a premium. How dangerous geopolitically is the unequal distribution of water in this case?
Well, first of all, I think, again, it's important to note that, Israel and the occupied territories in terms of availability of water, you know, this is not Northern Europe or Canada, but it is also not like certain parts of Africa. There is water, and if the water is used judiciously and is shared in a manner that is fair and equitable, there are realistic solutions. Obviously, you know, desalination is one of them. But to go back to something that Gerald Steinberg mentioned earlier, he said that Israel is one of the has one of the lowest use for industrial countries. Now, obviously, in order to develop any sector of the Palestinian economy, whether it's agriculture or industry or tourism or anything, it requires water. Israel has been able to develop because for 40 years it has regularly over-extracted from the mountain aquifer. And again, I'm not, the 20-80% figure is not my figure. It's in the Oslo Agreement, and Gerald Steinberg would do well to read them. It's in on the website of the Ministry of Environment. So, you know, those are official figures in terms of, you know, the division of the available water from the existing, you know, from the aquifers. So, you know, the claim that because Israel has always over-extracted vast quantity from the aquifer, that gives it the right to continue to do so. Mm-hmm. It's fallacy, it has no standing. And okay. Secondly, the claim that because Israel is an industrial nation, it can abstract more water and deny its neighbor the right to also develop its economic sector, that also doesn't stand up to scrutiny.
I also have a link on our RaisingSandRadio.org website to the Palestinian Academic Society for the Study of International Affairs in Jerusalem, where you can also look up these facts and figures for yourself. And that is our show for the week. Again, visit the website RaisingSandRadio.org to receive my book, Longtime Passing Mothers Speak About War and Terror, as a premium for a donation of $50. The book shares the stories of families in Palestine and looks at the day-to-day reality that they face. It also shares stories from Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, Lebanon, and the U.S. I went to all of these places to collect these stories. It took me several years, and these stories really do need to get out, and I feel a tremendous responsibility to do that, to share these stories with people, particularly in the United States, who tend to have very little idea of how life is under conflict in these countries. I'll autograph it for you, and it's a hardcover edition, and again, it's available as a premium if you make a donation of $50 to Raising Sand Radio and our parent organization, Mother Speak. And again, join us next week when we look at the successful food waste composting programs going on in San Francisco, California, and how composted food waste really does reduce carbon emissions, and how you can learn to do this or get involved in composting yourself. Thanks for listening, and tune in again next week.
People there are rich. People there are poor. Some have education, so what are they fighting for? Fighting for their freedom, fighting for their land, fighting for their children. Let's help them take a stand. Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. People of all countries, of every race and creed, we need a new beginning. Let us plant the seed. Plant the seed of love. Let that love seed grow. Plant the seed for everyone, so all the world will know that Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine.